I'm Tracy Sable. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, the president in Paris. Joe Biden arrives in France to commemorate the 80th anniversary of D-Day and address wars in the Middle East and Ukraine. Abortion and the election. Democrats introduce a measure to make birth control more widely available. We're on Capitol Hill. Paying respects. A high-ranking figure in the Church of England visits the tomb of a beloved Catholic saint. And blown away, Pope Francis reminds the faithful of the power of the Holy Spirit. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us on the Feast of St. Boniface. We begin tonight in France. That is where President Joe Biden is for the 80th anniversary of D-Day. He and other world leaders are there honoring and remembering all who took part in the Allied invasion that helped to bring about the end of World War II. But Biden's trip comes as the deadliest fighting on the continent since World War II continues in Ukraine. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports. Owen.
Tracy, President Joe Biden arrived in Paris today. His visit comes as allied countries struggle to find ways to turn the tide against Russia, which has recently gained ground on the battlefield against Ukraine. The president also trying to demonstrate steadfast support for European security.
President Joe Biden steps off Air Force One in France after an overnight trip to Paris. The French delegation welcoming him for several days of memorials and celebrations. His first big event comes tomorrow with a trip to Normandy. That's where the president will commemorate the 80th anniversary of the Allied landings there, which paved the way for the liberation of France and Europe. A group of American World War II veterans also traveled to France to mark the massive, historic Allied invasion of June 6, 1944.
I felt that mankind had lost its way.
Even those who survived paid a terrible price.
My mother and father gave you my four elder brothers. We lost one, and he's buried in Lorraine.
Friday, President Biden plans to give a speech during his overseas trip about the importance of defending freedom and democracy. This comes as Ukraine is locked in a battle trying to halt Russia's invasion. President Biden will get an update on the war this week when he meets with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky in France. At the U.S. State Department, we heard more today about the situation overseas.
It's Russia that's the aggressor here. It's Russia that is rolling its military equipment right up to the border and using it to shell civilian targets, and we think it's appropriate that Ukraine be able to defend itself.
And looking ahead to Saturday, the French president will roll out the red carpet for Biden, holding a formal state dinner for the American president.
Now, President Biden returns to the U.S. on Sunday, and up next, the G7 summit in Italy. And then next month, there's a NATO summit here in D.C. Now, separately, at the State Department today, where I was a little earlier, I asked officials there about the soon-to-be departure of U.S. Ambassador to the Holy See, Joe Donnelly.
Matthew, good afternoon. Joe Donnelly leaving the position as U.S. Ambassador to the Holy See July 8th. How quickly do you anticipate that position being filled?
So I don't have any announcements to make, but Joe Donnelly had an incredible tenure in that position, and we'll look to fill it as quickly as possible.
And I asked Matt Miller at the State Department there if the ambassador's position will be filled before the presidential election in November. He said that they would like to have a nominee ASAP, and then he put the onus on the U.S. Senate to make it happen quickly. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
All right, thank you, Owen. President Biden sweeping executive action to significantly restrict asylum on the U.S.-Mexico border is now in effect. It is raising concerns among Catholic leaders about the humanitarian impact that it will have. The chair of the USCCB's Committee on Migration wrote, "We are deeply disturbed by this disregard for fundamental humanitarian protections and U.S. asylum law. As defenders of human life and dignity, which we hold sacred and inviolable from the moment of conception, we cannot accept unjust conditions on the right to migrate for those fleeing life-threatening situations." All right, let's bring in Bishop Mark Seitz, shepherd of the Diocese of El Paso, to talk more about this for us. Your Excellency, thank you so much for your time. We're grateful. You've served in El Paso for quite some time now, and I know that you know firsthand just how heartbreaking this situation can really be down there. The numbers are overwhelming, I know. What do you think the government needs to do to better handle this situation?
Yeah, first of all, let me just say that from our perspective on the border, the numbers are not overwhelming. The numbers are actually down. We have occasional surges, and we need to really race to catch up to be able to handle those who are being processed and released at our border from time to time. But we have a pretty good system here in El Paso, and I think in most places along the border.
How is the diocese coping with the number of migrants?
Well, we've established through the years a system of shelters for those who are processed by Border Patrol and released. And that's the vast majority of those we're dealing with, by the way. They're not people who've just climbed the fence or something like that. They're people who turn themselves into Border Patrol and are seeking asylum. So those who make a claim and don't have a record that concerns the Border Patrol are released to our care. Most of them that we deal with are our families, fathers, mothers, children.
I know that you're in El Paso right now. The order went into effect at midnight. Have you seen any changes along the border yet, or is it too early to tell?
Yeah, I think it's a little too early to tell, but we will see changes. I'm pretty convinced of that. We'll see a lowering of those who are received. Many people will be turned back without even being able to make an asylum claim, which, by the way, is provided for in international and U.S. law. So we're going to be going against our own laws by turning these people down. We'll also see an increase, I'm afraid, of unaccompanied children, because there is an exception for them. Of course, the other alternative isn't good either, to leave unaccompanied children in a place that's as dangerous as some of these northern Mexico towns with the level of traffickers and so on that you find there. So there's an exception for them, but it also means that families who now don't have an option to come as a family and seek asylum are going to be saying, well, at least we can save our kids. And it means making that sacrifice.
Bishop Seitz, what do you think is the answer here? You know, balancing the safety at our border and other issues we see in the United States and welcoming our neighbors from other countries to seek asylum. What's the answer? How can we balance it all?
Right. What we've been saying for a long time in the church is that it is a complex problem and there aren't simple solutions. And the solutions especially are not to be found at the border. At the border, you kind of see the symptoms of the problem. But it's like treating a broken leg with aspirin, you know, so we can see a temporary change. But there are going to be a lot of consequences to just stopping people when they arrive here. We need to have effective ways of working with sending countries to help them to provide a more stable environment so that people don't feel forced to leave. And we need to allow more legitimate legal passage through visas and through a healthy asylum process so that people do have options other than trying to skirt around our border laws.
Well, Your Excellency, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us. We really appreciate it. God bless.
God bless you.
Our voters in Arizona are set to consider a measure on whether it should be a crime for non-citizens to enter the state through Mexico at any location other than a port of entry. The proposal bypassed opposition from Democratic Governor Kay Hobbs. It will now be on the ballot on November 5th. Under the plan, state and local police could arrest people crossing the border without authorization. The White House is firing back against a Wall Street Journal story in an article titled "Behind Closed Doors, Biden Shows Signs of Slipping." The outlet interviewed 45 people, Republicans and Democrats, who were in meetings with the president or briefed on them. WSJ reported last year when Biden was negotiating with House Republicans to lift the debt ceiling, his demeanor and command of the details seemed to shift from one day to the next, according to then House Speaker Kevin McCarthy and to others familiar with the talks. And during talks about a funding deal for Ukraine, he read from notes to make obvious points, paused for extended periods, and sometimes closed his eyes for so long that some of the room wondered whether he had tuned out. But two Democrats defended the president.
this is regurgitating a story, right, that we people want to continue to put out. Look, Joe Biden stood in the Capitol and gave a State of the Union. After that, everyone clearly said, this should be put to bed. We're going to have a debate in a couple of weeks. I think you're going to see again this issue should be put to bed.
This is a transparent effort to distract everybody from the fact that there is now a convicted felon who is poised to be the nominee of the Republican Party.
From the president to his son, who returned to a Delaware courtroom for his federal gun trial. Prosecutors called Hunter Biden's ex-wife and a former girlfriend to the stand. The women spoke about how during their time with him, they found crack pipes and other drug paraphernalia. The prosecution used their testimony to attempt to show the president's son knew that he had drug addiction when filling out a form to buy a firearm. Hunter Biden is facing 3 felony counts. He has pleaded not guilty. Almost 2 years ago, after the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade, Democrats have been trying to chip away at the ruling, and now they are proposing measures that go beyond the court's decision. The latest, a Senate bill that seeks to codify access to birth control. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales joins us now with more on that. Eric.
Well, good evening, Tracy. Yes, this is the latest attempt by Senate Democrats to keep the abortion and reproduction issue at the very center of the upcoming 2024 election. The Right to Contraception Act would make access to birth control, including over-the-counter birth control and abortion-inducing drugs, the law of the land. Pro-abortion Senator Ed Markey introduced the bill, and he claims that the legislation protects women's freedom.
MAGA extremists have an anti-freedom, anti-rights agenda. They are offended by the idea that people can make decisions with their doctor to decide if birth control pills, an IUD, or Plan B works for them.
Federal protections for contraceptives are a critical piece of protecting women's reproductive freedoms. This legislation would codify the right to conception into federal law.
But conservative groups say the fine print of the bill includes transgender surgeries and sterilizations paid for by American taxpayers and doesn't include conscious protections. Senator Steve Daines, who is heading up the Republican election effort, tells me this is simply an election year ploy.
I mean, this is just another stunt. They're desperate at this stage of the game, now 5 months away from an election. That's why the border bill stunt, now this other contraception bill stunt. It's all desperation by the Democrats as they know they're losing these races.
Others agree.
So they're just trying to make an issue of something that's not even an issue. There's no states that are out there that are trying to ban contraception. So I just think it's an election year stunt, and it's poor form, it's poor politics, and again, it shows that they're desperate.
Dozens of GOP senators support a bill authored by Senator Joni Ernst to provide safe and effective contraceptives to women without the non-birth control provisions included in the Democrats' version.
Instead of giving access to dangerous drugs without doctor supervision, what my bill will do is provide greater access to safe, over-the-counter contraception options. The Republicans do support safe access to contraception.
And we do want to let you know that the first procedural hurdle for the bill did fail today. It failed to get the 60-vote threshold needed for it to move on. But the issue isn't going away anytime soon. The National Republican Senatorial Committee released a memo this week advising GOP Senate candidates to emphasize their support for birth control. And House Democrats unveiled a plan of their own to force a vote on contraceptive protection that they hope to bring up later this month. And take a look at this, folks. Just blocks away from the Capitol, a group known as Americas for Contraception unveiled a giant IUD outside of Union Station. Now, the group says that it's to help raise awareness of the need to protect and codify the right to birth control. And by the way, as we know, the Catholic Church opposes all form of artificial birth control. The bishops wrote a letter to all lawmakers saying that the Democrats' bill seeks to, quote, bail out the abortion industry and trample conscious rights. At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
Officials in China are slamming a decision by the U.S. State Department to commemorate the 35th anniversary of the bloody crackdown at Tiananmen Square.
我要强调，对于上世纪八十年代末发生的那场。
Beijing says that it, quote, strongly deplores and firmly opposes the acts of the U.S., which tarnished China's image in 1989. An estimated 180,000 troops and armed police ended a months-long protest against communist rule. Yesterday, the U.S. State Department expressed support for the Tiananmen demonstrators and called for China to accept international scrutiny of its human rights record. The Lebanese military says a gunman has been captured following a shootout at the U.S. embassy. The suspect attacked the embassy near Beirut in a shootout that lasted close to a half an hour. A motive was not immediately clear. Officials in Lebanon say the gunman appeared to be alone and was identified as a Syrian national. The suspect was shot in the stomach and leg before being captured and taken to a hospital. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says that he is prepared to strike those responsible for a massive brush fire in Israel. Prime Minister says his country is, quote, prepared for very strong action. The blaze is now under control. It began after fighting with the Lebanese terror group Hezbollah. Israel and Hezbollah have been trading fire ever since the war with Hamas broke out last October. And we have a lot more still to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including you'll get a kick out of this. Learn more how one team received some encouragement from the Holy Father ahead of the European Soccer Championship. And all eyes on the economy. We take a look at the latest jobs numbers, housing, and more, and what impact it could have on the upcoming election. Welcome back. A new survey finds that when it comes to the election, housing costs is the biggest voting issue for Gen Zers, outranking the economy and abortion. The study from Redfin found that 91% of adult Gen Zers surveyed said housing affordability will influence their presidential pick. On the other hand, millennials, Gen Xers, and baby boomers all said the economy was their top issue in the upcoming presidential election. And joining us now to talk about this and more is Jeffrey Campbell, professor of macroeconomics at the University of Notre Dame. Professor, good to be with you as always. Not really surprising here that housing costs is one of the top issues for the younger generation. And quite frankly, it really is top of mind for a lot of people as well. The cost of buying a home and even renting has gone up significantly since the last election. And as we know, the more you have to spend on housing, the less you have to spend on everything else. So it really does have a trickle-down effect.
Absolutely, Tracy. And this generation has a particular reason to be concerned about housing prices. Since the pandemic, housing inflation has been in the 6-7% range, whereas before the pandemic, it was about 2%. So the ability for these current young people who are in Generation Z to start a family, get that first house, is really being challenged by the current economy.
Yeah, and elsewhere, the Bureau of Labor Statistics announced that job openings hit a three-year low this week. Talk to us more about this. And is this a sign of concern?
So, yes, it is a three-year low. It came in, the job openings came in at about 5% of private business employment. New hires came in at about 3%. These are both low relative to the last few years. But I think it's important to keep in mind that these numbers were very, very high in the immediate aftermath of the pandemic. And these numbers, 5%, 3%, are actually quite comparable to the numbers we were getting out of a healthy economy before the pandemic. So those numbers don't particularly have me concerned, thankfully.
Yeah. Something else I'm going to touch on, it was an Associated Press report stating that the median CEO compensation in the S&P 500 is nearly 200 times more than the median employee salary. I mean, obviously, they have different roles and responsibilities here, but still, that's a significant difference in pay. Has there always been such a huge earnings disparity?
There hasn't always been such a huge earnings disparity. It's been very large for as long as you and I have been around. It was about 50 times when we were younger. It's ballooned a lot. The causes of that ballooning and whether it's a benign or harmful development is very much up for debate.
All right. We don't have a lot of time left, but I do want to get to this. The University of Michigan's U.S. Index of Consumer Sentiment showed its first significant decrease of 2024, albeit slightly above its position this time last year. Meantime, a recent survey by the accounting firm KPMG found that while people are mainly optimistic about their own personal finances, they are still worried about the U.S. economy. What's more, many of those folks say they plan to do more discount shopping this year, even those people who make above $200,000 a year. Professor Campbell, what do you think this signals?
What I think this signals is still inflation worries have not gone away. When we talk to ordinary consumers and workers about their expectations of the economy, overwhelmingly, inflation is the big deal. And we saw that in 2021 and 2022 with very low readings of the Michigan survey. These readings are a little bit higher than that, but not really consistent with a healthy economy. And so I fear that consumer fears of inflation are still with us.
Okay, we're going to leave it right there. Professor, always good to be with you. Thank you so much for weighing in. We appreciate it.
Likewise. Thank you.
Today is World Environment Day, but is also the day the European Climate Observatory Copernicus reports an alarming milestone. May 2024 marks the 12th consecutive month of record-breaking global average temperatures. UN Secretary General says the situation isn't hopeless.
We are playing Russian roulette with our planet. And we need an exit ramp off the highway to climate hell. And the truth is we have control of the wheel. The 1.5 degree limit is still just about possible.
That 1.5 degree Celsius refers to the temperature limit goal of the Paris Climate Accord. Scientists warn crossing that threshold risks extreme and irreversible climate change impacts. Up next on EWTN News Nightly, take a breath. Pope Francis reminds the faithful of the power of the Holy Spirit. Plus, the Archbishop of Canterbury visits the tomb of a well-known Catholic saint. And that which you are looking at right there is the Starliner, a Boeing spacecraft with two astronauts on board. The historic maiden voyage this morning took place after several setbacks. The Starliner is a collaboration from Boeing and NASA. A solar-powered sign of faith this week, the Catholic University of America in Washington, D.C., dedicated a large solar farm on campus ground. The project was inspired by Pope Francis.
All of this is done in the construct of Laudato Si, the Pope's encyclical on the environment, which commands us to be thoughtful about and to take demonstrable action to be good shepherds of the earth.
The West Campus Solar Farm takes up roughly 19 football fields. It is projected to cut greenhouse gas emissions by more than 7 metric tons every year. The clean energy will benefit the Catholic University as well as the local community. Pretty neat stuff. Well, Pope Francis says that the Holy Spirit makes us truly free.
Sarete liberi davvero. La libertà che ci dà Gesù.
At his weekly talk at the Vatican, the Holy Father reflected on the name of the Holy Spirit in the Old Testament. It meant breath or wind. And at Pentecost, the Spirit was made known by the roar of a rushing wind. Pope Francis adds that the Holy Spirit can be as overwhelming as strong winds capable of moving oceans. The European Soccer Championships begin next week in Germany, and one team decided that it was time to work on its crossing. That is the team from Croatia meeting Pope Francis at the Vatican earlier today. The players and coaches gave the Holy Father a personalized jersey and a vintage soccer ball. Star player Luka Modric was among those in attendance. The Holy Father encouraged the players to show their spiritual and human qualities in the tournament. Croatia opens on June 15th. Against Spain. Well, from Croatia to Spain, where the Virgin of Almendina received a surprise visit from royalty. The players of Real Madrid offered two trophies to the Blessed Virgin, the first from their big win and UEFA Champions final, as well as its April 30th award for winning the Spanish Football League. Cardinal Carlos Osiera Sierra compared the players to St. Isidore the Farmer, a simple man with presences on all continents. Finally tonight, the Bishop of the Church of England pays his respects to a Catholic saint. During a visit to El Salvador, Archbishop of Canterbury Justin Welby visited the crypt of St. Oscar Romero. He also saw the Catholic martyr's blood-stained clothes and prayed at his tomb. He said in a post on X, quote, "May we all draw inspiration from the life of Oscar Romero, whose love of God inspired his love of people and his hunger for justice, which ultimately cost him his life." And we thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable, and we leave you tonight with a look at the preparations in France for the 80th anniversary of the D-Day invasion. Good night, and God bless. Oh,